If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Fay. And with me, as always, Jack Manuel. And today we are recapping a Nets win over the Thunder, 124-115. Jack, it feels good to win.
Thank God, Nick. Thank the Lord above.
Yeah, it's been a rough stretch. Obviously, it's been talked about the Nets were on a losing streak. And before that, the only wins they had came against the Detroit Pistons, the worst team in the league. So it really has felt like they've been losing for almost a month at this point. They played really well for two quarters. Third quarter was okay. Fourth quarter was rough. We're going to jump to that in plenty more. Make sure you check the Buzz on all streaming platforms. But Jack, where do you want to jump to first?
Let's start with the first half, Nick. Let's start optimistically, because was that the best half of basketball that the Nets have played this year? 75 points, limiting to the Oklahoma City Thunder to only 47 themselves, 28-point lead, insane levels of defense, and like a change in scheme. The rotations look good, second chance points, transition. It might have been the best half of the season, Nick.
Yeah, I think it probably was. You know, you take a giant lead against a really good team in OKC, probably not a contender, but probably a tier under contending. And you play the type of basketball that we envision for this team to be successful, you know, and that's playing great defense and getting transition opportunities, playing with high energy, you know, a lot of ball movement activity. It just felt like the ball was moving. Guys were moving. It was just very high energy. And that's not something we've been able to say about this team for the last couple of weeks. So it's great to see that they can still do it, and guys on the team can step up and play really well. And we're not even talking about a good game from Mikal Bridges. It was really a lot of other guys that came up and stepped up, and Nick Claxton, Spencer Dinwiddie. It was just really good to see the team effort and the collective defensively.
Yeah, and there was a switch in terms of the Nets were playing predominantly switch defense, and it just worked so much better. I think it put a lot more pressure on the Thunder. We heard Dennis Smith Jr. at halftime sort of speaking to Yes Network, so speaking like Kevin Ollie, you know, gave us a good scout. And a lot of people have been falling in love with Kevin Ollie of late, and I think after tonight they'll probably fall even more in love with him, because the way that they honed in on their deficiencies, the way they defended SGA, handing him a lot, putting two on him, blitzing him, hedging, doing lots of different things to make him and forcing other guys to beat him, you know, getting hunting switches on Josh Giddey, hunting switches on Chet Holmgren on the perimeter, who's, you know, a good defender, but not a great perimeter defender. He's not Nick Claxton. So I think that that 24 minutes of basketball is going to live in my head for a very long time. And that's the blueprint for what you should. You watch that tape and you watch the last quarter tape and you go, how can we be these two different teams in the same quarter? And I think some of that is on Jacques Vaughn's rotations or lack thereof, or lineup combinations in the fourth quarter. But that first half of basketball, you know, the second chance points, the offensive rebounding, you know, the OKC make us look like, you know, prime Dennis Rodman when it comes to rebounding. So they were honing in on the weaknesses of OKC and really getting aggressive and forcing the issue and allowing what we've been wanting for so goddamn long, getting in transition by forcing turnovers.
Yeah, and I think switching obviously is a thing that we've advocated for a while, especially when the defense has been so poor all season long. And we saw, you know, at the end of last season for that little segment post-trade deadline, this was a good defense and they were switching majority of the time. So I think going back to that, you know, going to your roots, and I think it also allows Nick Claxton to excel. You know, and Clax, when he's locked in defensively making plays, it feels like he has more energy offensively. You know, he was just hustling out there. Energy was turned up, you know, running in transition, running in opportunities to cut to the rim. A monster on the boards. I thought he had a really good game in this one. You mentioned the game plan. I think the interesting thing about Kevin Ollie and the game plan would be, I would assume it's been his duty to make the game plan for majority of the season, you know, unless that's a change that Jacques Vaughn has made over the course of, you know, the last couple of weeks or something like that. So that's something to just think about. And like you said, Dennis Smith Jr., I thought his energy was just like so good. And especially with that second unit, where the second unit didn't really lose juice. And we've seen in some games in this losing streak where the second unit just hasn't had that level of chemistry and the level of impact. And tonight we saw that.
Yeah, Dennis Smith, Savage Jr., 6 of 11 from the field, 12 rebounds, 6 of them offensive, 7 assists, 2 steals, plus 14 for his 13 points, you know, flirting with that triple-double. You know, it was the second unit with him and Cam Thomas. Cam Thomas in the first half before he sprained his ankle on Chet
Holmgren. I'll give some credit to Royce O'Neal, too. I thought he made some really good passes in the second unit.
Yeah, I think all of them were really forcing the issue down low and causing the defense to collapse, causing the defense to make rotations, and allows the Nets to be efficient from the perimeter and efficient inside. It was like dunks and threes a lot of the time and layups. And because that was a product of the defense, and that was a product of the aggression of Dennis Smith Jr., who was, it felt like he had like 18 lobs to Nick Claxton tonight as well. It's like Spencer and Clax is a pick and roll combination that leaves something to be desired. I think they've been pretty efficient. I think the numbers are actually better than we probably do think, but those two just didn't miss. And it just feels like something I was thinking of the other day when I was just thinking about the Brooklyn Nets in general, because it's actually been a little bit of a chance to both of us been on a pod together and me individually just thinking about the team, that the Nets in general have felt like too nice and just like passive. And because you've got like a Mikal Bridges who's all fun and vibes, Cam J, the twins, cool. But when the Nets look good, there's an aggression, there's a swagger to it. And Dennis Smith Jr. brings that. Yeah. Like Dennis Smith Jr. brings that. And he brought that out of Clax. Yeah. And he brought that out of Clax too. And that in turn sort of like just feeds an attitude that I think in basketball, there's an intangible sort of thing that I think helps the team overall. And I think Dennis Smith Jr. makes a big imprint on that. I think Darren Sharp has in the past, didn't play a lot tonight. But yeah, Dennis Smith Jr. and Nick Claxton were our two best players tonight by a country mile. And without their efforts in the first half and even hanging around in the second half, like Dennis Smith Jr. hitting a three, you know, his aggression, Nick Claxton getting a billion offensive rebounds like Dennis Smith Jr. was. The Nets don't win this game. It's as plain and simple as that.
Yeah, and I think one reason the pick and roll works with Dennis Smith Jr. and Nick Claxton is Dennis Smith is trying to get downhill. You know, he's trying to attack and be aggressive, and he's forcing the big to recognize that. And that gives Claxton an opportunity to utilize his speed and really sprint to the rim. You saw a couple times where he just slipped and he was quick and it was just an easy pass and Dennis Smith Jr. hit him. And I think also it's just like he's an actual point guard. And sometimes, you know, Dinwiddie's just had a weird season where he hasn't really played well. And I think Dennis Smith just found an opportunity tonight to really just click and make things work. And like I said, I think the switching thing really matters to Clax because it allows him to excel and make plays. And when you make plays defensively, you feel good. And when you feel like you're in the zone, it does a lot for you. So I think overall, it's good to see him play at a really high level. Obviously, who knows what's going to happen with him long-term with the Nets, but even as a potential trade, and obviously people made the joke a lot tonight, you know, he's auditioning for OKC, which could be a possibility. So, you know, good for him to come out and just play really strong and aggressive and grab 8 offensive rebounds tonight.
Yeah, it's insane the boards that he was getting, some back tap outs in the last quarter as well, which gave the Nets some extra.
And some of it's just pure activity.
Yeah, and it's just him like going, oh, okay, I've got the probable rookie of the year on me who makes me look like prime Shaq. Like when Nick Claxton is the guy that's bodying you, that's saying something. And Nick Claxton barely bodies 5 centers in the league. So this is one of those 5, I guess. But yeah, it was just used. And the play of the night from him, you know, he had some good defensive sequences as well, but it was the offensive sequence where he finished with his right and he had like Chet Holmgren on him. He's like, you know what? I can probably put you in the spin cycle here. And he like bullied him and finished with his right. You rarely see Nick Claxton finish with his right hand. He loves the sort of like lefty little finish, but he's just, he was on it. Like, and I think Clax is a product of confidence and energy and
when involvement.
An involvement, like when he gets some touches, when he gets a screen, when he gets an offensive board, and look, 7 of 10 from the free throw line. They tried to do, you know, hack a Claxton, Jacques Vaughan made the right substitution, putting DFS in for a little sequence, so it got down to the 2 minute mark. But yeah, Nick Claxton was Clax City tonight. Obviously, I think the discussion surrounding him, and do you read this as like, you know, the what Nick Claxton is as a center in general? No, this is probably an exceeding expectations performance because of the right matchup. But if the Nets continue to play switch, as you were alluding to, Nick, then we'll get the continued defensive dynamo that we got from Nick Claxton last year. And that's a base level of a guy that can earn $20 million in free agency, maybe even more. I've sort of said, you know, the range just seems to be extending day by day, but focusing on this game, we got the W and Clax City was back and it was great to see.
Yeah, I mean, Clax has been a monster on the boards essentially since the last Detroit game. You know, 11 rebounds against Detroit, 12 against Washington, 16 against OKC the last time. That Pelicans game, which was a blowout, he only had three, only played 20 minutes that one. But against Houston, 13, and then 13 tonight against OKC. So nice to see him trying to have more of an impact in that area, especially offensively. And I think that's something, you know, for you to just kind of do every single night. You know, I think even against the bigger centers, he can use his energy and activity to have an impact in that area. But,
you know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
I think Spencer Dinwiddie had a bounce back game in terms of scoring. You know, this is probably the most aggressive he looked in terms of trying to score the ball in the paint. And it's been missing all season long. And I think that's why he's really struggled a lot too, is because teams are understanding, like, when he's running pick and roll, he's just looking to pass. He's not going to the rim or trying to win his one-on-ones down there. And tonight we saw him look to do that. You know, he looked to get fouled, but he also looked to finish a shot. He would have Josh Giddey more than a handful of times in this one.
Barbecue chicken, Josh Giddey. Barbecue efficient. Chicken, mate. Yeah, and look, Spencer Dinwiddie's line tonight was wonderful. 7-12 from the field, 3-7 from three, 6-6 from the free throw line, 23 points, 4 assists, 3 rebounds, a block, only the 2 turnovers. It was the driving. Yep. Dinwiddie is what looks great. And when he's driving to score or driving to at least put the defense under pressure, because he's a guy that should be and has been a strength of his in the past. I remember in podcasts in years past, we've spoken about, like, it was him and LeBron James that are like two of the best drivers in the league when it comes to scoring and efficiency there. If Spencer can use his game inside and out, because 3-7 from three from him is great. Like, he's been 32% around that sort of range this year, and he's been bad. And I think all of the Nets should be doing that. Like, I think Mikal Bridges should be doing that. I think Mikal Bridges should be driving and getting to the line and then using that confidence and seeing the ball go through the rim, which we sort of speak about the intangible sort of energy and confidence that you get, and let that feed the mid-range and feed the three-point game. Spencer Dinwiddie driving looked great. And the Nets look so much better when they put pressure on defense. It doesn't matter if it's Rudy Gobert or Joel Embiid down there. Continue to drive because they get open looks on the perimeter when the defense collapses around a Spencer, around a DSJ, around a McHale, around the Clacks, whoever it might be. The Nets have good passes. Royce O'Neal, as you've alluded to as well, Nick. So Spencer using this game, he's been inconsistent as hell this year in terms of his scoring, in terms of his just efficiency. But this is a night where you get the steady Spence, the Spence that is driving and making an impact on the team in multiple levels. And that's what the Nets need from him. And they need it for him in consistent fashion.
Yeah, it's just been a weird season from him. And then, like you said, he's been bad, you know, at a lot of different points, especially over this previous stretch. And it's just like, why aren't you doing this more? And I think tonight he wasn't looking to play perfect. He was just looking to play basketball and make plays and not necessarily get an assist, but make the right pass. And then maybe it's a secondary assist or something like that. And you point out something earlier I meant to touch on was the switching stuff and them trying to attack switches on OKC. And they weren't always looking to score with those switches. Sometimes they were just looking to create an advantage. And that's what they've missed. They've missed creating advantages for each other and playing team basketball. You know, in the past month, it's been a lot of just ISO stuff and looking to score. You make, you know, you are, everybody's had tried to be the engine of the offense rather than trying to have a team engine that, you know, kind of plays off each other. And we saw what it can be. And obviously tonight is a level of an outlier because the team hasn't played this way consistently over the course of any stretch of the year, but it's a nice flash to have an idea of what maybe it could be at times.
Yeah, the Nets' best offensive player is Cam Thomas, and he should play an extended period of time and he can create offense unto himself. He showed that through consistent spades. You know, after missing 20 straight shots, he hit three in a row and all of them were wet as hell. Like, it was just money from him. Got to the layup line, which was a nice little feed for him, and it fed like his catch and shooting from three and stuff. And I think what you're alluding to, Nick, is what the Nets identity should be. It's like, we can kill you by like death by a thousand cuts, yeah. Not by like one guy being like a goddamn superstar, because the Nets don't have that. Mikal Bridges has been pretty poor this season. Cam Thomas has had his role been chopped and changed. Like, try and just do the right things and have like principles rather than expecting your talent to win, because the Nets don't have enough high level talent to beat a team like in isolation sort of play like Kyrie or Luka or KD or whatever. You got to do like fundamental things for a team, which is what they did tonight for 2.5 quarters. And that's why they beat a team that has been one of the best in the league so far this year, like a top five team in a lot of power rankings, top three in some people. So it shows you the blueprint, and that's a blueprint you try and emulate as much as you can. Like, maybe you can out-talent teams like the Wizards, even though the Nets didn't, or the Blazers or the Pistons, which they barely did. But overall, you got the game plan, you got the blueprint. Try and stick to it as much as you can, and hopefully a guy like Bridges, a guy like Thomas, who should be the two offensive engines, are able to like lead the team like they did against the Bucks a little bit. But yeah, I think team basketball is what the Nets should be aiming for consistently, game after game after game after game.
Yeah, I think for Cam, too, it's like relying less on ISO. You know, you saw him tonight come off some dribble handoffs, come off some screens, not try to do it all on his own, and got some of those easier shots, and then, you know, went back to shooting a little bit more from three, which I think is important for his game. And I think over the course of the last two games, he's kind of played more within the offense, where he was pressing a little bit, coming back, where his minutes were getting cut, his role was all over the place. Now he's just kind of, you know, going with the flow and just playing basketball a little bit more. And obviously he still needs to make strides, as I think, as a creator, you know, and setting up others, but it's nice to see him put up some points.
The one thing I'll, again, CT obsessed, maybe making a point against what you're saying with his playmaking, that sort of lob that he threw to Claxton in the second quarter, I think it was, I think he's growing in his awareness. And I think this game sort of showed that, because I don't think he had a lot of playmaking opportunities, but for me, what I saw was like the catch and shoot, where he was just willing to throw that sort of quick trigger, which I think all of the Nets should have. And Mikal Bridges could learn a thing or two from that too. It's just like, don't overthink it. Like, you guys are in the NBA. You're all like incredibly talented dudes. You can all shoot the ball from all three ranges, however you want to do it. But yeah, I think it's just a bit more instinctual basketball, because Cam Thomas by nature is like a hooper. So that guy should be able to like score from anywhere. And I think it was great to sort of see him after the game in the previous performance against the Rockets, where he was, you know, cold, and he's been cold for the last two games in a bit. He was like, hey, I'm human. Like, this is going to happen to me. And he was unfazed. Like, and I just love that about him. I think that's one thing that we might not have spoken about a lot, Nick, is Cam Thomas's growth and maturity and attitude. You know, we heard like in summer league and stuff, the Steve Nash little digs here and there and that sort of thing. Whereas now, you know, he's not really doing anything to distract against like Jacques Vaughn or do any sort of detrimental stuff that you might see from like Kuminga or whatever it might be, even though some of it is warranted. And it's just like, we would be probably be on his side, but there's a level of just steadiness to his mentality right now. And he's sort of like, whatever role it is, if I'm coming off the bench, I'll do it. And I really like that. I think a lot of other probably Nets fans do as well. I just think he deserves a bit of credit for that.
Yeah, he's definitely matured from a media perspective and handling pressers and just the comparison of the last couple seasons. And getting back to the play you mentioned with the Klax lob, obviously the pass didn't connect. You can see the growth, and also you can see, you know, still an area of need, because the play actually started off where Klax had a guard sealed underneath the rim and Cam missed him. And I was like,
he was trying to feed him. You could see he's like, I don't have confidence in my, like, if that was Spencer, you'd probably get that pass in or DSJ.
It's not, I mean, not to take a shot at Cam Thomas, it wasn't an extremely difficult pass given, you know, who was on who and Claxton's ability to jump and all those different things. But you do like the idea that he tried to go back to Klax almost in a forceful way, but that's okay. If he's forcing passes or trying to force playmaking, that's fine, you know, because that's meaning that he's trying to improve in that area. And I think, again, that's going to be one of the most crucial things for him, is improving as a playmaker and a passer and just becoming a full piece of the offense until he takes his game to the next level.
Nick, who do we go to next? Because I think there was a lot of positives, and we discussed, you know, an overwhelming amount of positives. Like, the role players were pretty good at DFS. Royce had their moments. I think Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges were two of our lesser players tonight. Is the Mikal Bridges discussion, Nick, like, what's going on with Mikal Bridges right now? Because it just seems to me like, and we had our discussions early in the game when the Nets were hot about, you know, a few negative things towards Mikal Bridges that I think are warranted in terms of his defense, but his offense looks pretty paltry as well. Like, again, it looks better on paper when you get to that sort of 17 points, 5 of 13. It's not like awful where it's like 0 of 20 for Cam Thomas over an extended period. But the thing is, I still have confidence, more confidence in Cam Thomas. If he's going to go 0 of 10, I'd still rather have the ball in Cam Thomas's hands, because I think he has his mentality offensively is like, he's confident. Like, he's Dion Waiters-esque. He's just like, I'm just going to put it up, man. And like, I know if I'm missing. Like, defenses aren't hounding Mikal Bridges in a way where it's putting him off his game. He's just playing out of rhythm, it feels.
Yeah, he's almost psyched himself out, it feels like. You know, you're watching him play this game and there's opportunities for him to knock down shots, you know, take shots that we've seen him hit consistently, you know, pre the last month or so, over the course of his career, you know, where they're just middies, easy mid-range, short-range shots, just going up, trying to finish layups. Right now, he's just pressing so much. He's second-guessing. He's hesitating. He's not, you know, being aggressive and natural. He's just not in sync in any way whatsoever. And you can see it, you know, and it's affecting every part of his game. And defensively, you know, we talked about it, like you said, you know, his feet look like they're in quicksand. You know, he's getting beat by Josh Giddey in one-on-one situations and just getting cooked. And it's just like, dude, you used to smother the best stars in this league and make them uncomfortable and be like, wow, this guy has to work to score 20 on me. And now you're getting cooked by solid to okay players rather than, you know, forcing turnovers. You know, he had one highlight defensive play where I think he had a block on SGA in this one. But other than that, it was just like, man, you aren't doing anything good on the court right now. And we like Mikal Bridges. We want him to be successful. It just sucks to see him psych himself out this much.
Yeah, the inconsistency is pronounced right now on both ends of the floor. Like, DSJ, I'd rather have him on a primary sort of guy on the
he's gonna hound him yeah. And Mikal is just not hounding anybody, and he, not to say his defense was bad last year when he joined the Nets, but it wasn't necessarily great either. We've yet to see that Mikal smothering defender in a Brooklyn Nets uniform consistently.
Yeah, I just want, like we're sort of alluding to the earlier topic point of talking about the attitude, the confidence, whatever, like, talk yourself, like, do the Michael Jordan sort of shit where you psych yourself up in a way by, like, just doing mental games with yourself. Hey, I need to, like, destroy this Washington Wizards team because, you know, this guy spoke shit about me behind the scenes, even though it didn't happen. Like, Mikal Bridges, when, like, at points this year where he's like, he can't guard me. I keep bringing that point up, but that's Mikal Bridges when he's at his best. And he's not, like, by nature a sort of guy who's going to be mean. He's going to be like in your face attitude, Draymond Green or whatever, but he's going to have confidence. He needs confidence. And if he needs to manufacture that, so be it. But there's no level of consistency in his mentality or his execution or his productivity of late. It's just, I'd rather get like an 0 of 10 game, but he has like 3 steals and 2 blocks or like big defensive plays.
I'm trying to dunk on like somebody or something.
Yeah, it just feels like there needs to be something to light the fuse, a spark. And right now, the spark is not coming from him individually. It's rough to watch.
It really is. I mean, it's just the only, I guess, good thing he did tonight was grab 8 boards. You know, that's something, at least trying to have a level of impact. But again, 17 points, 4 turnovers. It's a game where the Nets scored 124 points. And, you know, your supposed best player just was not very productive. I think the 3-point stuff is alarming. 0-5 from three. Didn't look confident from there. He's just like, just you feel like every shot's going to be a miss. And it's just not fun to watch him play right now. And it's like, I mentioned on Twitter a couple of days ago, maybe, you know, the trip to Paris could be helpful, you know, because they'll have a couple of days of off basketball, pre-Paris, post-Paris. You know, you're essentially going on some level of vacation, you know, doing some different things. Maybe you could, you know, take your mind away from it, and then maybe you'll come in with some good energy in the big international game. So that's hopefully a saving grace, because until after that, it's really just like the trade deadline and the All-Star break where you're going to get a break.
Yeah, it needs to happen. Like he needs to make it happen. Yeah. He can't be waiting for it to happen. It feels like we say that a lot about the team overall, about being reactive rather than proactive. Mikal needs to do the same. Like he seems to always have these sort of like 38 to 40% sort of field goal sort of percentages rather than like, you know, a 60 or a 20. Like, and that's just me thinking anecdotally. You've probably got stats in front of you that don't reflect that, Nick, but it just feels like to me, like Cam J wasn't great tonight either, but Mikal just needs to like really just go at it. Like, it doesn't matter if you're wasting energy like on the defensive end. Like we still expect, like you can still hit all these shots. Like he hasn't lost his shot mechanics. He hasn't lost the game. Like I feel like if we didn't see the 27 game stretch from him that we saw last year, like we would maybe be going, oh, okay, yeah, Mikal's just an okay player. But I was personally talking about, and people were finding tweets deep in my archives comparing him with Scottie Barnes, Brandon Ingram, Jaylen Brown. I'm like, how do people find this? And like, I said that in March. I said that in March last year. But in saying that, I think it's relevant talking about it right now because all of those guys are playing much better basketball than he is. And despite the fact that he looked good in the All-Star returns, he's getting a few votes here or there. He's not playing like an All-Star by any stretch.
Yeah, I mean, his first half of the season, you know, we cut the season into two halves right now. You know, in the month of October, he was good. You know, obviously only 3 games. November, he was solid, shot 46% from the field, 35% from three, averaged 22 a game, 6 rebounds, 4 assists. December, averaged 20 points a game, 43% from the field, 37% from three, under 4 assists. And now getting to January, obviously only 2 games, not including tonight's game. 14 points, 3.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 31% from the field, 29% from three. You tack on tonight, those numbers aren't going to get much better. So it's just, he's just gradually gotten worse as the season progressed. And it does, you know, does the mileage start to add up, you know, from going from the Olympics to right into the season? Is that having an effect on him? I think you could make a credible argument that that's playing a role into it, especially if you're already, you know, mentally struggling with the game and now you're physically maybe not having the same level of juice you've had over the course of, you know, the first chunk of your career. It's just a lot of things are not set up for him to be successful right now. And like you said, he has to change that himself and find a way to get back on track. You know, whatever that is, saying, coach, you know, I need to play less minutes tonight, or maybe I need to focus more on one specific area, whatever it is, you know, win one little thing at a time, and then you'll get back to where you want to be.
Yeah. And look, I can see the argument for it. And I hear people making that argument, but SGA also played international basketball and has led into one of the best seasons an individual guard has had in a very, very long time. So we don't know the answers. Only people behind the scenes do. Mikal himself does. So I think, yeah, simplifying things, just go, hey man, like just attack. We don't care if you have like a few turnovers here or there. We know your handle isn't amazing, but right now you're getting easier opportunities. Like, the defense is unhounding him in a way that they have for Cam Thomas in different stretches. So, hopefully things turn around for Mikal. And if they do, the Nets are going to play a lot better because they rely on him to play heavy minutes, to be a defense and offensive anchor. And if he can't be efficient, it means that other guys need to step up and the load increases for others, the burden increases for others. So hopefully Mikal can find that sort of October, November sort of range. You know, all you want is sort of 22 to 24, decent enough efficiency, good defense, and you'd be happy. But right now,
in low key, you really need a 3-point shooting. You need it to be pretty good. It doesn't have to be like 45%, but really around that 40% range, because the spacing is so important, especially with his ability to hit contested threes, not super contested, but shoot over guys with his wingspan. And when they don't have that, that's such an issue. Obviously it wasn't tonight, but in other matchups, it becomes such a tool for an offense like this. And when he's not hitting, it's rough.
It's rough. Any other
Cam Johnson
general
rough too? I mean, we just talk about him quickly. 9 points, 3 of 15 from the field, 3 of 10 from three. A lot of open looks. You know, it's not like we're talking about a ton of difficult shots in this one. You just need him to be better. It's pretty simple, you know. And those guys weren't good, you know. And you expect at least one of them to play well. You know, if one guy has a night off, it's okay. And Cam, obviously, the standard's not as high as Mikal, but again, he just signed that big contract over the offseason. Like, De'Ron Sharpe didn't have a good game tonight, but that's okay. He's a backup center. He's still developing. It's not the end of the world. And you have Nick Claxton, where Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges supposed to be your two best wings, and they weren't.
Yeah, and look, to preface with Cam Johnson over the recent pretty bad stretch has been maybe the Nets' best player.
Yeah.
So to have an off game here is okay. Hopefully that cramp, muscle soreness that he got towards the end of the game isn't anything too serious. But yeah, we'll give him this game. But you know, the standard is high for these guys. These are our starters. These are guys that are playing 35 plus minutes. We need them to perform. It shouldn't be on Dennis Smith Jr., Royce O'Neal, these guys to lead the team.
You're not going to get 20 from Clax and Spencer Dinwiddie every single night. You know, you're going to need more from these guys. I think Cam Johnson has played well over this last stretch, but watching him, and obviously I haven't been able to be on the show. You know, I was lucky enough to start the new year with a cold, but he doesn't always like put his foot on the pedal. It feels like it's a good game, but he could have even a better game. Or maybe sometimes it's the team not getting enough shots. It'll be like, he's playing well. He's not getting enough touches. He's not getting enough shots up. And it's like, he should have 20. He should have 25. He should do more. So it's just, he always sometimes just leaves you wanting more, thinking that you could get more out of his game. The Nets don't necessarily do that. I don't know if that's a component of him, the rest of the roster, the players, the scheme, the coaching, whatever it is. It's just sometimes you think there could be more from Cam Johnson, especially after signing to that contract. You'd like to see some bigger games and some bigger flashes.
Yeah, I honestly don't think he's that good. Like, yeah. You know, look, this isn't to be like, you know, throw shade on Cam Johnson. I think he's a good wing. Good wings get paid $20 to $25 million in the modern NBA. Like, he's not Jeremy Grant. He's like sort of in that Tobias Harris. Like, maybe that's the
Tobias
sort of
might be a little bit better.
Tobias is better. Like, yeah. I'm trying to just think of guys that make like like Aaron Gordon. These sort of guys, Aaron Gordon, again, better. He should be. But look,
those are the
maybe
guys that he's trying to get to, though. I think would be fair to say is like, they're not, you know, the first, second, or third best players on their teams, but they're still impactful. And they have like one area where they can really excel in the game. And obviously Tobias has been hot and cold throughout the last couple seasons, but this year in a different role with James Harden not being there, I think he's starting to take that game up. Aaron Gordon does a great job of doing the little things, being impactful defensively and using his physicality. But I guess quickly before we get out of here, Jack, Lonnie Walker came back tonight. You know, looked like a guy who missed, you know, a month of the season and didn't really get a ton of touches in this one. So we'll see what he does in the next game.
Yeah, just good to have him back. He'll be better for the run.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Jack, always a pleasure. Big thanks to everybody who listened. Check the buzz on all streaming platforms.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one?
Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.